Steve, we're matching today. We both have our quarter zip on, although you have your customary podcast quarter zip on.
Greg in Glasgow.
That's our international audience. That's our nod to our internet.
How cool would it be if we could get Greg to listen?
We have had a couple. I know there have been people that have, on vacation at least in other countries, looked at our stuff. So
we'll take it.
We're an international brand.
There we go.
And that brand is called Stuff Summers Says with
Steve.
Steve, this is the podcast edition of that brand. And we are joined by this week by the voice of a very important Penn State brand, at least, and that's Jeff Byers, stopping by to chat about Penn State wrestling, but more so his career, kind of in our typical fashion of kind of the behind the scenes look. And it's a great conversation. So really excited about that. We've got some Penn State hockey stuff to talk. And then Steve sent me one of his most bizarre texts ever. And so we have to discuss that as well. So go ahead and listen to the interview with Jeff. Thank you to him for joining. And we'll be back after this. Steve, we have hit what I'm calling the quadfecta, I think is the best way to put this.
You're making up words now, aren't you?
I'm making up words. We have had Steve Jones on the podcast. We have had Brian Tripp on the podcast. We have had Joe Putnam on the podcast. And now we're joined by Jeff Byers, the voice of Penn State Wrestling. Those are all the four core sport voices.
So best for last.
Yes, best
Clearly
for last.
Clearly saving the best for last. That's obvious.
Jeff, how are you?
I am well. This is my favorite time of the year. I was just talking to a couple people earlier today, and this really is kind of my Christmas morning this week. And 3 weeks from now, there's just that anticipation that kids get on Christmas morning. That's what I get ahead of the Big Ten and NCAA wrestling tournaments. It's just there's nothing quite like it if you're a wrestling fan. My favorite time, because it's that anticipation of what might happen or what you think is going to happen. And then, it never quite plays out exactly how you think it's going to in your mind. And that's the fun of it.
I think that's a good way to lean into this conversation. 34 years, you think you said, now on the call of Penn State Wrestling. What keeps you coming back after 34 years?
Well, it's funny because I've gotten a lot more recognition since Cal has come to Penn State, and obviously the stature of the program has got into another orbit. But my love of covering the sport and covering the program honestly isn't any different now than when I first started. Like, I love the sport. I love trying to bring what I call traditional play-by-play broadcasting to wrestling. When I grew up, I listened to wrestling. I listened to a lot of sports radio, but the wrestling always bothered isn't the right word, but it stood out to me that the wrestling broadcasters did not sound like a Steve Jones or like the traditional broadcasters. And there was some good to that in that it was kind of folksy, but the negative side of it was there wasn't a lot of focus on what was happening on the mat. And I really kind of set out when I started doing it that I wanted to truly bring that play-by-play, paint the picture, as the broadcasters will tell you they try to do. And that is what I wanted to do in wrestling. And I didn't feel like in the wrestling broadcast that I had heard that is what people were doing. It was almost, let me tell you some stories. And oh, by the way, there was a takedown. And let me tell you another story. And oh, by the way, there was an escape, instead of focusing on the action. So that's really what I wanted to try to bring to the table. But what I quickly learned is that the connection that you have with the fans, and this is any broadcaster in any sport, that connection with the fans is, especially on the radio, I think an intimate one. I think they feel like they know you, and I feel like I'm, trying to reach out to them and make sure they know exactly what's going on. So that connection with the fans, I felt very quickly in doing the sport. But what really has made it enjoyable, and this goes all the way back, you know, through all of the coaches, all of the athletes that have come through the program, is the relationships, getting to know the kids, getting to know their families a little bit, and just kind of seeing them progress. And then obviously now a lot of them have gone on and had a tremendous success well beyond the wrestling mat and with their families and all of that. And it's just kind of neat to see that connection now over the decades of, you know, the wrestlers that were coming through when I first got started, to now and everywhere in between. And I, you know, for me, it's, you know, Cale talks about with his wrestlers, it's about having that passion for the sport and loving it. And, you know, if that passion ever goes away for me, I will know it's time to step aside. But, right now I just, I truly love the sport and I love being associated with the coaches and the kids and the families that come through the program and being that kind of connection for the fans with those kids and coaches.
It's funny you said the word passion, because I was thinking about one of the questions I wanted to ask you, and I initially had a different word in here. So I'm going to ask the question now since we're on the topic. But the one thing I kind of have not necessarily always understood until I got to Penn State or really started paying a little bit more attention to wrestling is there is this intense passion, maybe even more so for wrestling than there is comparatively even for football. And obviously some of that comes from the success that Cale Sanderson has built over the years. But why is there this niche, I don't want to say cult-like, but it's an intense passion for wrestling, particularly in the state of Pennsylvania. And then I think the crown jewel of that being Penn State's wrestling program, in your opinion.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things. One is, you know, it's just a tremendous tradition. And I think it's one of those things that does get handed down from generation to generation. And, you know, it's interesting. I'll go back. There was editor for the Center Daily Times. This is going back a couple of decades. I think John Fritz was the coach at the time. And he told me, we had him on our morning show, and we were talking about a wide variety of topics. And one of the things he said is that when he first came to the area, and he was not from Pennsylvania, not from the area, and he said, I had heard people say, you know, boy, wrestling is big here. And Penn State was good, not obviously anything like they are now. And they were getting good crowds at Rec Hall, 3,000, you know, 4,000 plus. And, you know, they'd get, you know, 5,000 for big matches here and there. But what he told me was that he wasn't sure how much he really believed that, you know, there was this love affair with wrestling, but they started tracking every time they put a picture of wrestling, whether it was Penn State or high school wrestling, on the front page, not on the front page of sports. He said, if we put a picture on the front page, he said the newsstand sales went up, and I'm forgetting the exact number now, but it was more than 50%. I mean, it was like a crazy amount. He goes, and it happens every time. He said, so me being the brilliant business guy I am, every Sunday during the wrestling season now, we put a picture of a wrestler on the front page to get those sales up. So, you know, that passion has always been there. Exactly why it's there, I don't know. Again, I think there's obviously a long history of success with the high schools and with Penn State, and there's certainly a strong tradition in the state of wrestling. But exactly why that passion is here versus other places, I'm not exactly sure. But it is certainly there. There is no mistaking that. And again, it's been there all along. It's just kind of on full display with obviously the success that the program has had here for the last 15 years.
So with that passion, I guess, in a way, you are part of that passion, or you are part of what cultivates that. And I guess, do you recognize that? Do you feel a responsibility in the way you make a call to kind of tell and explain that passion?
Yeah. So the two things, and again, this goes back even before Cale, but I guess it's kind of crystallized for me watching Cale and the way he and the other coaches, you know, Cody and Casey are just exceptional coaches, exceptional human beings as well. And watching the way they coach, and it's just unlike anything I've ever seen in the sport. I grew up and it was all about toughness. And I mean, we had good coaches and they cared about you. It wasn't that, but it was, I mean, wrestling wasn't fun. Like that isn't what the goal was. The goal was to tough it out and to get better, but it wasn't about having fun. And Cale comes in and it's like, we're going to have fun. It's like, well, this is, I thought we were wrestling. And it's like, well, yeah, we are, but the reason we do it is because we like it. And it's just different. But it got me to really thinking about why it is I do what I do. And obviously, I mean, I love the sport, love the program. But what I really want to do is, again, paint that picture, like accurately portray for somebody that isn't able to be there, isn't able to see the match on TV, to feel like they know exactly what is going on, what happened, why it mattered to the kids and the coaches and the teams involved. And, you know, honestly, the best compliment I think I've ever gotten was I got a letter from a guy who said, I'm blind, but thanks to you, I get to see all of the Penn State matches. And I'm like, well, that's the coolest thing anybody's ever
really cool.
told me, because that is the ultimate goal. So, yeah, I mean, I want to bring the passion and the fun that these guys are bringing every day in the room to the broadcast and kind of, you know, hopefully accurately represent what's happening. And again, it's not all going to be roses. It's not all good news. Certainly a lot more than not in this era. But even I honestly loved my job. I mean, when, you know, Penn State had a couple of losing seasons there and, you know, Troy Sunlin was going through difficult times. Like I still loved the job. Like it was cool for me to get to be able to be at the matches, get to know the kids, know the coaches, see what was happening. So, you know, my love affair with it isn't because of the winning that Penn State has had lately. It goes back before that. Now, the winning, is it more fun? And obviously there's everywhere this team goes now. I mean, it's like a rock star type of following within the wrestling community. And it is cool to watch when you go to these opposing gyms. They're sold out. And then after the match, I mean, there's lines of kids and adults, but I mean, especially kids wanting to get autographs. And, you know, to the credit of these guys and to Cale, they take the time and sign every single autograph. I'm sure it maybe has happened somewhere sometime along the way. I have truly never seen, not one time, Cale Sanderson say, oh, I'm sorry, I can't do that. I've just never seen him not sign an autograph that was requested.
Jeff, you used the word folksy early on in terming to qualify broadcasts. I would maybe use boring or subdued for some wrestling on the radio. I'm curious, the people around you when you're live, right? Because you bring an energy. I assume the people around you know what you're doing and hear you doing it. What's that reaction like? Because there's certainly a connection with the listeners. And what are the people around you like when you're making a big call and they're like, oh, well, there he is. I mean, yeah, what's that like?
It's funny because, again, I really have always broadcast the same way. I mean, I yell and get excited when good things are happening or when exciting things are happening. There have been some people that have been rankled. It's like, well, you got excited when this guy did a big move against Penn State. I'm like, I know, but it was a really cool move. Like like the sport is first and foremost for me. Like I just get excited about seeing good wrestling and exciting things out there. So, you know, in terms of what I'm, you know, trying to bring or convey, it again, it is just that passion. And the funny thing is, I Penn State, when I first started doing it, was good, really good. You know, Rich Lorenzo was the head coach, and they had some terrific teams and some teams that were in the thick of things at the national tournament, but they had some teams that got trounced in some matches too. But at the when I first started broadcasting the NCAA tournament, we were down on, there were like three media rows, and they were always down close to the mats. And so they would just have the radio folks in there on media row. And so you'd have newspaper writers over here and, you know, maybe another radio broadcaster there, some other folks that were covering for magazines or whatever. So I, again, just do what I do. So I'm yelling, and if a Penn State kid wins, and I'm getting people kind of looking back at me. But inevitably, much more often than not, I would have somebody come up afterward and say, man, that was fun sitting next to you. It was hard for me. Like, I'm here covering, you know, Lehigh kids, but you're yelling so much, I had to watch what the Penn State kid was doing. So, you know, and obviously there was a famous incident, I guess, when the Big Tens were at Illinois the one year. It was just not an ideal setup, but they had basically my broadcast position, and I was pretty much right next to each other. And again, I'm calling the matches the same way I always have. Now, at this point, this was maybe the, I'm trying to remember now if this was Penn State. I mean, David Taylor was the bout I was calling. So, and he was beating an Iowa kid. So it would have been either probably 2012 or 2013, but I'm calling it, and, you know, I'm getting excited because Taylor's trouncing the kid, and Mark Ironside, while we're on the air, comes over and is like, dude, what are you doing? You can't be yelling, or something like that. And I'm like, I'm sorry. Like, this is what I do. And a lot got made of it. I didn't think anything was really going out over the air, but apparently it did. And people were amused and bemused by it. And I have a tremendous amount of respect for Mark Ironside. It really was not either of our faults or anything. It was just, and since then, I think everybody's been pretty good about just, you know, making sure the radio, any radio broadcasters, because it's just hard to have radio broadcasters right near each other regardless. But yeah, overwhelmingly the response I've gotten from people around me has been good. Now, the last several years, I want to say the last three NCAA tournaments at least, we now kind of have our own booth at Nationals that they put us up usually if it's at a hockey arena, in where the hockey announcers do their broadcast from. So for me, and probably for some folks around me, it's a good thing because I can yell and not be bothering anybody. But like Mike Finn with Win Magazine is always really nice to me. And he was actually at the Iowa meet this year. And he's like, do you mind if I sit next to you? I always love listening to your broadcast. So it is very flattering. And it's very cool to hear those types of things. But again, I'm just trying to be me and to bring the broadcast that, you know, I think the fans want to hear back home.
That's cool. You know, with wrestling, I think one of the challenges to wrestling comparatively to football or basketball is those sports are on TV pretty much every night. Wrestling is a little bit, you have to kind of know what you're looking at to know what you're looking at type thing. How do you in your calls translate that to maybe the more average fan and maybe not necessarily the diehard?
Yeah, it gets back to trying to paint the picture. And so I know most of the wrestling moves, but I try to be a little more descriptive than that. And it varies a little bit over the years. And I feel like more and more of the fans now are getting, like, they know what a whizzer is by and large. They know, so there's certain things, like I used to describe a little more detail, not every time, but like once or twice during the season, I would mention, all right, you know, this guy has a whizzer in, meaning he has his arm over the other guy's arm. I've gotten away from that a little bit, probably over the last 10 years in terms of describing the move. But I do tend to more describe what is happening than to use the actual terminology of the move. So I'll, you know, hey, he's under the arm. You know, I'll mention it's a half Nelson, but I also try to describe again, hey, the arm it is in under his right side and, you know, he's trying to turn him. So I try to give, again, if you're watching and you don't know the sport well, it's like, oh, okay, well, I at least have, you know, single leg and double leg. I mean, some of the stuff translates the move to what is being, I'm trying to describe what's happening, but some of it, it's, you know, kind of a feel for it. And I will say it probably is helping that the wrestling is getting more televised now than it certainly ever has. And so, you know, I have had people come up to me. It's like, I always wondered what you were talking about with, a wizard, I'm probably overusing that example, but I mean, a particular move, and it's like, oh, I heard you called and then I saw it and now I know exactly what it is you're talking about when you talk about a, you know, front headlock or a shock or whatever it may be. So, you know, the advancing TV coverage is actually probably helping me in terms of being able to relate to the audience, again, what's happening in these matches.
Makes sense. Go ahead, Steve, go ahead.
I want to ask about TV coverage. I mean, I know you're not seeing it live because you're there doing it. ESPN specifically, lots of camera angles, different mats, there's stuff on the plus. I'm curious from a wrestling ambassador, if that's the right term, standpoint, they've, I think, changed a little more the past couple of years and have gone away from whichever Baldwin brother it was that was a wrestler, right, to come in and commentate on nationals and actually focused on the sport a little more. And I feel like that's the right move, right? Because it's not like they're going to grow the audience all of a sudden at nationals. So I'm curious what your thoughts are on those, on growing the sport, like that challenge for them. You talked about casual fans, but for TV, that challenge, because the casual fan probably isn't slowing down at nationals, and you don't want to dumb it down too much for the people who are really tuning in and knowing what's going on.
Yeah, so I think it's a lot like the hockey games that I watched as a kid, because I was not a big hockey fan, but they would do a great job of explaining some of the rules at the start of the broadcasts, so that if there was, you know, somebody that was a novice to the sport, it's like, okay, this is your chance to kind of learn a little bit. This is what this is what offsides is, this is what the blue line is, that sort of thing. And then they'd launch into the broadcast, and obviously during the broadcast they're just doing that. I think ESPN has done a terrific job of increasing the coverage and serving what is a niche audience. And there's no question, I think that's another thing. I think any sport, right, you're looking to grow, and I think that that's fine, and you want to do that. I also think it is okay to recognize that you're in a sport that is never going to be football or basketball. Like, it's in this country, for a wide variety of reasons, like, I just don't think that's a reasonable goal. I think widening your lane is fine, and trying to push that as far as you can makes sense. But I think also, you know, be true to yourself and realize that it is a sport that has, again, within the community that it has right now, it is a passionate community. They are going to follow you anywhere and everywhere that they can, and, you know, serve that and then see if you can. And I think ESPN's approach has been right. I think they are doing a really good job of that. I think they are getting people that know the sport, as you said, I think much more than it used to be. It is, hey, these are guys that can describe a little bit. This is why this move is working. This is maybe a adjustment that you might see this guy make based on what this shot is. And I think that's important type of analysis to get in, to, again, both serve that passionate core group that you have, but also try to build out a little bit. And I think the numbers reflect that that both the Big Ten and ESPN, I think their model is working. I mean, we're seeing good viewership numbers on both fronts.
and then one that both networks do, all networks, I guess, post interviews almost on the mat as they happen. I'm curious of your thoughts about those. I mean, from a Penn State perspective, I guess we've gotten one of the best ever, right? You get Bo Nickel in the national championship, and that's just what we do here.
Yeah.
Wonderful. But that feels like one out of 10 that are worthwhile. But maybe I'm wrong, so I'm curious.
Yeah, it's a tough thing because I do think the emotions are raw, right? As they are in any sport. I mean, especially when you're in a championship level, you just won or lost a national title. Like that emotion is raw. I am one, you hope that the kids, but two things, I guess. One is remember they are kids and you're catching them in the moment. I think allow some grace there. If something is, you think over the top or, too personal or anything like that. That being said, I come from that place of passion. So I like hearing, even if it's somebody that I don't particularly like, or I'm like, oh, that guy just rubs me wrong. Like, I still like that man in the moment because I think too often when, you give somebody 15 minutes to cool down and it's like, okay, now come out. It's too staged. It's too, all right, my coach reminded me, don't say anything like this or that. And so personally, as somebody, again, and I'm, probably a creature of media at heart, I want to find out what you're really feeling. And I like getting the raw emotion myself. And even like with, coaches being mic'd up in the corner and that sort of stuff. To me, that's great insight. And as a fan, like that's the stuff I want. I want to know what's going on, what's being said, what a guy really thinks. So for me, it's all good. I certainly understand how it's like, oh my gosh, why would you do that? It's a 19-year-old kid. Of course, he's going to get carried away. I'm also, I hope as a society, it's like, okay, if he does say something over the top, again, be forgiving. It's a 19, 20-year-old kid caught up in the heat of the moment. But I, again, personally, I'd rather have that than, I gave 100%. I think he did too. I really respect him. And, let's move on.
That's fair. That's good.
You talked about emotion and hearing it from coaches. And I think for maybe not necessarily the first time, but one of the more noticeable times I think ever we've heard from Cale, this came this season with the comment about the music during the matches. What was your opinion on that, Jeff?
Yeah. So it's one of those things. I was aware of it, but I wasn't really, I have the headphones on and I'm kind of zeroed in. And so I'm not, like, I was aware. I'm like, there were a couple of points where I'm like, but there's music just playing this whole time, I guess. So I wasn't really thinking about it or noticing it to a great degree. I mean, I definitely was aware of it. Like, if anybody had asked me afterward, like, did you notice that was different? It's like, well, yeah, it was. But it wasn't something I was really focused on. I will say, I think for the entirety of Cale's tenure here, like they do have, and it's not uncommon, obviously, but there is music in that room constantly from when you go in. And again, part of it is just get the kids in a good frame of mind, little extra motivation, all the stuff that music does. There's a reason that there's always been kind of that correlation between music and sports. And I will say, I think Penn State fans are very knowledgeable. I think it is an older crowd, right? I mean, it is more fans than not are, 60 plus at Rec Hall. So I also think there's some complacency that has come in. I think the fans are appreciative of what's happening. But, it reminds me of the Atlanta Braves, and it's like, okay, yeah, we're winning another East Division title. It's like, well, we know we're going to win the East Division title. The question is, can we go win a World Series? And it's like, well, all right, but appreciate, like, winning a division title is a big deal. Like, that's an accomplishment. And, I do feel sometimes like it's – I think fans, again, appreciate it. I just don't think there's that – You know, when I think back to that 2011, 2012, those seasons, it's like, oh man, you can feel it coming. And now it's like, well, we know Penn State's going to win, and they still get fired up at the right moments, but it's not that constant buzz. And I think that's kind of what Cale was alluding to. It's like we are putting out maybe the greatest team in the history of college wrestling. And there are times during these dual meets where it's very quiet in here. Like that doesn't seem to jive. So I really think it's just about trying to create a little more atmosphere, create a little more juice in the building. And, you know, I'm also one of those that I'm old school enough that I complain about the constant thumping at Beaver Stadium. It's just too loud and too much for me. But I get it. It's for the students. That's what it should be. The players and the students love it. So, and it's not keeping me from the game. I mean, I'll complain about it, but it's not, I'm not going to not go to Beaver Stadium because of it. And so I think this is much the same thing. I'm sure there are some people that you don't like it, but it's like, well, are you actually not going to go and watch this team do what it does because you have some music in the background? I don't think that's the case.
I'm glad that we aren't too off base on our opinion, at least hearing Jeff say this, because this is pretty much how I felt. I know Mr. Samsel had some differing, slightly different.
Oh, I think he's spot on. The only person I feel bad for is that four-year-old man who yelled, "We are." That was that kid that made that kid's weekend. And Cale's like, yes, if the whole audience can hear him. And that kid's like, well, shit, Grandpa brought me here. And I said, "We are." And everybody said, "Penn State." That was his day. And now we're like, don't want kids to do that. That was, but everything else you're exactly right about. So.
Let me ask you a question about buildings, I guess, particularly Rec Hall or the Bryce Jordan Center. Do you have a preference, or is Rec Hall home?
So, I mean, I do love Rec Hall. I do think it needs some work. I think the, you know, some improvements with the restrooms, and for the love of God, the concessions would be much appreciated. But, and again, I'm a townie. I was raised in the area, and I have very fond memories of weekends, hours spent in Rec Hall playing basketball and wrestling around and playing racquetball and all of those things. So, you know, Rec Hall just is meaningful and special to me. I also think because that crowd is right on top of the mat, when it does get loud, when it is electric, there is nothing quite like it. I really like having the one dual meet a year at the Jordan Center. I think that is a spectacle. I think it gives fans who can't get into the, you know, the 6,500 or so seat Rec Hall that opportunity to, okay, you can attend this meet though every year. So I think that I think it's good for that. And I love what Penn State has done with that. And the folks at the Jordan Center deserve a ton of credit. They have made that an event. I mean, they have it down with the fire and the smoke and the band and the music. And I mean, it feels like you are at a big time athletic event. And so I think doing that once a year, kind of like the whiteout, you leave fans wanting more. And I have fans ask me all the time, you know, man, shouldn't they do like a couple of meets over there? And I'm like, I think there's something to be said for, again, leaving fans wanting more. Doing the one whiteout, doing the one Jordan Center match, to me, I think that's the right recipe there to again, have that be a special thing for the wrestlers and for the fans over at the BJC. But home is Rec Hall, and that place is, you know, we've been around. I think I've seen most of the other wrestling venues now, and I will put Rec Hall up there when it does get loud, when you have, you know, a Zane Rutherford riding a Logan Stieber for an entire period. That place is as loud as anywhere you're going to find in college wrestling.
You talked about some of the best teams ever in Penn State wrestling history there earlier, and Zane Rutherford, also one of the best names ever. Where do you think this team sits amongst that conversation.
So I think it's going to depend on what happens here in the postseason. But I from day one, going back over this summer before the season even began, it felt like this team had the potential to go down as not just the greatest at Penn State, but the greatest in the history of the sport. Now, right now, I don't think it's there. Again, it comes down to postseason accomplishments. You know, I go back to the New England Patriots. Had they won that game against the Giants, like that team goes down, I think, arguably is the best NFL team in history. But they lost the game that counted. And it's like, yeah, they were really good. It was a great story. But they aren't mentioned, when you're talking about the all-time greats. So it is going to come down to the postseason. But this team has a chance to match the two greatest accomplishments, I think, in terms of postseason by teams in the history of the sport. Minnesota in 2001 is still the only team that ever had all 10 starters earn All-America honors. That 2001 Minnesota team was very unique. It won the national title. All 10 wrestlers were All-Americas, but none of them were in the finals. Not only did they not have any national champions, they didn't have anybody in the finals. So they were done on Saturday night. They had the team title wrapped up. They had 10 All-Americans, but nobody in the finals. So that is a remarkable accomplishment. Again, they're the only team that ever did it, 10 All-Americans in one season. This team has a chance. I mean, it's going to take some work, but all 10 wrestlers are certainly in All-American contention. Like, it's not a far-fetched, you don't have to have somebody have an unbelievable out-of-nowhere tournament. You need a couple of guys to finish, get one more win than what their ranking would indicate they should have at the national tournament, and that they're all Americans. So, and seven of them have already been all Americans, and the other three are freshmen. So again, and those three freshmen, again, I think are all capable of being all Americans. So I think that's on the table for them. And then, Iowa's 97 team had 170 points at the NCAA tournament, which is the most ever. They had five national champions that year, which is tied for the most ever. Penn State obviously has done that now twice as well. But when you look at it, that Iowa team in 97 had six in the finals, five champions, eight All-Americans, and but all 10 wrestlers qualified for nationals, and all 10 won at least three bouts. So even the two that weren't All-Americans, wow, contributed significantly. When you look at this Penn State team, again, it's not an easy path to get to that 170, but there is a path there. You have five number one ranked wrestlers. Obviously, they are title contenders, and I think Mitchell Messenbrink is as well. So you have six guys at least that are in the mix, which would match, if they all got to the finals, that would match what Iowa did. Five of them are certainly capable of winning the national title. And then I think, again, all four of the others are capable of being All-Americans. Well, if that happens, again, bonus points will factor in. I mean, Penn State can make a real run at it. So, I think this team has the potential to go down as inarguably the greatest ever. I mean, if they can top 170 and get 10 All-Americans, and again, no guarantee by any stretch on either count, but I think they'll be in the mix for both. If they achieve both those, again, to me, it's not even debatable at that point. This team goes down as the greatest in history.
Cool. All right. Well, we will wrap it up there. I want to offer you this chance to plug. Where can people find your calls? Where can people find your work? Yeah.
Go PSU Sports is where we have the live feeds for all of the Big Ten and the NCAA tournaments. And, they archive everything, I think, going back to, I'll have to double check that now, but I think it's 2020 or 2019 now. So that's cool. And not just for wrestling, for all of the sports that there's play-by-play for. So that's kind of a neat thing that if you're a fan of Penn State Sports across the board, you can check out. And we also have a new sports station that I'm involved in the State College Center County area, and it's Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. I do a morning show. We do a news talk show on a sports talk station from 8 to 10 a.m. It's called Let's Talk. I do that with Scott Giese. And then Goon Conlon, Keith Conlon, who was a member of the 94, should have been national title team, undefeated Nittany Lions, does a show with me on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 3 to 5 at Quaker Steak and Lube. And so Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox, we're a brand new station. We just started here in August, and we're slowly building into what I think is going to be a really good home for local sports and just the local community at large. I really like what we're trying to do in terms of just ingratiate ourselves within the community and really wanting to be a part of it and to kind of really help promote the good things that are going on in Center County and throughout Central Pennsylvania.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Jeff. I appreciate the opportunity.
I think the one thing I went into this interview and one thing that I've never quite understood, but also understood about Penn State wrestling is the cult. I don't know if that's the right word. It is the intense passion for Penn State wrestling that I've never really seen or experienced elsewhere. Cause it's Penn State football on steroids. That's like, there's no other way for me to describe it. And I think Jeff at least illuminated that a little bit in that conversation. And I think he also recognizes the importance slash power that he has in that conversation. I think that's what stood out to me. And you can just, again, and I think the main thing that anytime we have an interview that comes through is you can see how passionate these people are about their jobs. And that's why he's done it for 34 years. And Steve Jones has done it for however many years. And I think that goes a long way for the listener too. And I, as a fan, don't want to lose that. And I think when they can do that, they do that well, and that comes through.
Yeah, I think you're alone, not alone in terms of Penn State wrestling fans. They have a strong connection with Jeff Byers and his work because of the energy he brings to it. I think he's right. Like Pennsylvania, there's a lot of high school wrestling that's on radio that's just bad stuff. And I'm sure college wrestling and other places is just bad stuff. Like you're in the gym and we'll just tell you somebody scored. Jeff does it a little differently, a little better. And it's his passion. And also, I think the thing that I enjoy about him, and I know this about Steve Jones too, like I know what's happening by his voice, but but Jeff is very, Penn State wrestling is the most important thing, but I think the sport of wrestling is a close second, maybe a 1A. Like he's measured on officiating. He'll say, well, I should have gone Penn State's way. He'll also say it should have gone the other team's way, right? He's not that dyed in the wool that he's not going to allow himself to miss the obvious. And I think that serves fans, which is what I always want play-by-play folks to do. So I appreciate that a lot.
I think as we, and I know we did, we haven't interviewed Joe from the Penn State women's basketball perspective. But I think, I do think that in Penn State in general, and I think particularly the conversation with Steve and now Jeff, and of course, our dear friend, Brian Tripp, Penn State fans are really lucky with the media coverage in terms of at least the voices of radio that we have. And I think maybe they, I don't know if they get taken for granted per se, but I don't know if they're celebrated enough. And I think that's important. I was interested to hear his perspective about where this Penn State wrestling team sits, because it kind of, I think we all kind of think that, even if you aren't, even if you're more like, because you have, Steve pays a lot more attention to wrestling than I do, but I at least try to watch a few matches every season, and we'll tune in this weekend and next weekend. I think it just kind of feels that this team is very special, and it's cool to see it be appreciated in real time.
Yeah. And I think one of the things we didn't get to is where they fit, where the dynasty fits, right? You know, Iowa won 11 of 12 national championships from 75 to 86, and then won 9 of 10 again from 91 to 2000. This would be 11 of 13 for Penn State during this run if it happens. So I'm curious about, would have been curious about the differences there with him, but he had so much good to say. And I agree wholeheartedly about the quality of the play-by-play folks. I think Steve Jones is respected nationally among his peers. Ryan Tripp works the Frozen Four, so people know what he's doing. And I think people respect Jeff too. So I think in terms of top-tier sports, and women's basketball is going to be good enough, and those guys do a good job, that I don't know that many programs have four different people or four different groups in those sports that are serving their fans well.
Yeah, yeah. Penn State fans are really lucky in that. And I don't know. That's why we have this podcast. We want to take a moment there you to go. Appreciate that. Okay. Feel good. Feel good. Anything else wrestling wise you want to hit on?
No, let's cool off and go to the next topic.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's just... Oh God, I can't recover from that one. All right, Steve, let's get into it. Penn State men's hockey goes to Ohio State Minnesota. I had Ohio State on the mind because of, I don't know why they were on the mind. Penn State goes to Minnesota to play in the first round of the Big Ten tournament this weekend. Let me just ask the obvious, or let's get the elephant out of the room. If Penn State doesn't win this weekend, will this be the last time we see Guy Gadowski as the head coach of Penn State hockey?
No.
Okay. Why?
No. Because I like him.
it's a fair answer.
I'll give you a long but short list. A, because I think I like him, because he's one of my favorite coaches. He's honest. He's a little more cliche this year because I think they're struggling, but he doesn't know an answer. He's never afraid to answer a question, which I like. I respect him and what he does for the program, because I saw him working with the Lions, the Roar Zone kids last year at the sled hockey game, down behind the plexiglass, working on little dance moves as they were celebrating the thing. No other coach is going to do that here. Like, they're just not. And he was genuine about it. This, I think, and you know more hockey than me, so you can reel me in from this one. I think this is the toughest job in the Big Ten, and he's done a good job with it. They were one win from the Frozen Four last year. They're, since Notre Dame joined the conference in 2018, they're averaging a .428 finish, so fourth in the conference. They finished in first place in 2020, probably should have advanced. Won the tournament in 2016. No, I think if next year they struggle like they've struggled this year, because they felt a little more not as consistently competitive this year as they've been in some past years, I think if next year's that way, then maybe so. But I think this year, less than a full calendar year removed from going into overtime to reach the Frozen Four, it would be too soon.
Yeah. Here's how I feel about it.
That's a yes, but. Here's how I feel about it is yes, but.
It is a yes. It is a yes. I feel anxious about it, I think would be the best way to say it. And I think it's interesting to hear you say it's the toughest job in the Big Ten, because I don't feel like that's the right answer. And but I can't think of a tougher job in the Big Ten. Every other school in the Big Ten has credibility or a national standing or a pipeline of players coming in, more so than Penn State was. And the reason why I feel anxious about it is two things. Number one, they, in my opinion, have underachieved. I think they should have been a tournament team this year, regardless of the kind of the scoring they lost, particularly the goaltending situation dropping off, going from decent to, I think, either worst or I think it was second worst in the country when I looked up their save percentage earlier. That surprised me. But I think logic and reason is also why I can not feel anxious about it. And it's what you said there of they were one goal away from the Frozen Four last year. It's not like Guy Gadowski hasn't won at Penn State. It's not like this is just a bad year. What is frustrating about it being, and this goes back to the best job / worst job in the Big Ten, we still haven't quite gotten what we thought Penn State hockey was going to be. And what's the common factor, Guy Gadowski? And I that's why I feel anxious about it. I think he will come back. I think it's too reactionary, kind of like what you're getting at, in terms of performance and success he's shown that he can win. I think the one thing that irks or concerns me is the not misses, but the lack of all of the other Big Ten schools for the most part, really all of the other Big Ten schools, maybe Ohio State, not so much, are pumping out NHLers pretty frequently. And Penn State has had three, I believe, Casey Bailey, Brandon Bureau, and there's one more, and I'm blanking on what his name is off the top of my head. And I think that kind of goes into the, like, we thought that this was going to go slightly differently, and maybe it's just our expectations collectively were off. And so that's why I feel anxious about this could be. That's why I asked the question, because I think it's not impossible to think that it could happen. Do I think it should happen? No, I think that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, and I think the pipe. So for where I'm at with worst, toughest job is right location. Like the national teams, you can throw a stone and hit Michigan, Michigan State, Notre Dame. Chicago's there. Like it's just not as easy to get to. Not that it's hard anymore, but it's just there's not that pipeline. They haven't done as much. They lost a couple key recruits, you know, one or two that would have been in the state that maybe would have helped.
Let's stop there. I mean, the Logan Cooley thing is it's the elephant in the room. Like it's if Penn State, no discredit to anybody that covers the team, yourself included, Steve. If Penn State had more investment, not Penn State, if there was more media investment on Penn State mm-hmm. hockey, the way that Minnesota or Michigan primarily have it, that question not being answered of why he didn't come to Penn State when he was a Pennsylvania boy is the most baffling, because he was it was very well known in hockey circles that he was going to be the premier Pennsylvania player.
And they had a good, you know, my understanding, good offer, right? Like, so in terms of him getting there. So I think, and so maybe that's toughest job, right? Maybe there wasn't people to play with. Maybe there's not enough coverage for people to see me and know me, although I think the hockey insiders know it. I think the anxious piece for me, and I didn't pull the numbers, I had them last week too, you know, in terms of NHL draft picks on rosters, right? Penn State's at the bottom, Penn State and Ohio State, and that's probably not going to change. So I think that's the challenge. For as much as I like Guy, and not that he doesn't want to have talented players, I think he's comfortable with, okay, we've got the best we got, and it's all about playing together, and all guys pulling together and rowing together, and we'll be good. And that's great, and that's endearing, and that's wonderful, and they've had the three largest Saturday night crowds the past three Saturdays they've been home. But at some point, the Jimmys and the Joes, if they're better than your Jimmys and Joes, it probably does matter. So that's the thing that I don't know, and I've just never had that conversation or had the opportunity to have that conversation of, hey, this mentality of if we all work together, does it prevent you from getting seven NHL draft picks on your roster? Because you don't want the stars. You want the right people that fit your culture and blah, blah, blah. And then you're struggling if you're struggling. So I think that for me is the elephant in the room more so than who you have. It's is that mentality probably doesn't change, because that's what the coach's mentality and approach is. And it worked. It's worked. But when it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Right?
So, yeah. No, I think that's a fair way to put it. The other thing that makes me anxious is I think about who's Guy Gadowski's boss is, and that's Pat Kraft. Now, with Boston College in particular, yes, that's a hockey power school, but they're because of Jerry York, their situation is very much different. Like they when Kraft, I can't remember the timeline exactly, but Kraft inherits that program, right? Like it's well established, it's well decided, and everybody knows who Boston College is. Even this year, even you look and they just pump out guys the same way Michigan, and geographically that makes sense up there. And I don't know, I don't necessarily 100% buy the geography thing, because I think recruiting is different this day and age than it is 20 years ago when college hockey wasn't on TV except for the Frozen Four. Kind of going back to the wrestling conversation, right? Like the Big Ten Network has been a big reason behind that. But I think that's why it's just like Pat Kraft has seen what a good hockey program can look like, and that's why what makes me anxious about it. So I would anticipate, I don't know if anticipate's the right word, that Guy Gadowski's back next year, but I would also not be surprised if he's not, because it's just.
Yeah, I think that the AD would add that trepidation for me. I guess, you know, and as I was looking, you know, Penn State, every team in the Big Ten since Notre Dame has joined in 2018, every team except two have won the regular season championship. And one of those two teams is Michigan. So in right. that time, you know, and we talk about the coaches and players talk about how great the Big Ten Conference is, and it is, and it's balanced and it's tight, and there's no doubt about that. It's hard to win. I asked you before we started, yeah. how many national champions from the Big Ten during your lifetime?
During my lifetime?
Yeah.
There's been at least one Ohio State. There's been at least one Minnesota. And there's one Michigan, but there's no Michigan States, I don't think. And I can't think of a Notre Dame one. And did I miss a school there?
Wisconsin.
Has there been there's been a Wisconsin one as well? So
yeah, 2006. Six, I got told. I got a Michigan State, a Wisconsin, some Minnesotas, and two Michigans. So,
six. All of them have?
I didn't see Ohio State, but I might have missed it. So six during your lifetime. No Notre Dame.
Okay.
Michigan State, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Michigan.
Okay.
Not all of them. So yeah, it's great. And there was that year when three of the four were from the Big Ten.
Right. Like, it's not
5 years
easy.
Ago. So it's, no, I mean, this year, BU and BC are having a year, right? Like, it's.
Yeah. But also, like, I don't know. That's the thing. It's not easy. But you go look at Hockey East, you can kind of like look at the NCHC, yep. kind of say the same thing. And it's like, maybe this is just the climate, and you have to find your way through that. I do think, I mean, like I said, I don't buy the recruiting thing that much, just because the market or the internet exists essentially. But you do, you know, you look at Michigan primarily, literally the high school that the U.S. developmental team goes to is across the street from the big house.
Right.
Minnesota is the true hotbed, particularly the Minneapolis region, is the true hotbed of high school hockey in this country.
So here's the thing that would give you pause that goes against my argument. Was it last week? Last week, media session for the final road series. One of Coach Gadowski's answers to something about the program was, it was like a minute and a half about what a great staff we have, best staff I've ever been associated with, great support for the student athletes, blah, blah, blah. And there's a part of me, right, that's like, okay, I'm going to save this for the season wrap up, and I get a chance to talk to him. If this is so good, right? If this is so good, why is that on the ice not as good, right? Like, it does it reflect it, kind of thing, you know? So I'd be disappointed if it was that knee jerk. Like, I don't think they're there to merit it yet, but there's lots of other little factors, right? New AD. Do they think they're not going to monetize it more because they're getting the crowds they're getting. Like, so they're not going to have more in attendance. So, and when you bottom line it, I don't know that there's a savings or whatever else. But I do think I think you can finish fifth or sixth in this conference and look really competitive at times, and at times they haven't this season, mm-hmm. right? So I think that's the difference.
That was so, yeah. Okay. All right. So I think we answered that question, right? We're good about our answer.
Yeah, we beat the horse. That's good.
Okay. All right. All right. Steve sent
what did I send you? I wasn't drinking, so what,
no,
what was it?
It was today. It was today.
Okay.
We were pitching ideas for old guy, young guy, and you said bowling shoes for old guy, young guy. And you told your class?
So before
they're considered stylish?
In class last week, feature writing class, we were trying to identify stories. So I asked kids to tell me, you know, what's the best story they have about themselves or family that would be the genesis for a story. So a couple of kids told me one. And then this one kid said, well, my cousin, his mom, she's really tough. He went bowling and he came home without his shoes. He wore his bowling shoes on and he was afraid to tell her for like a couple hours because he thought she was going to be mad and whatever else. And he finally told her and she was upset and they went back and got him. And I said, well, you know, not too bad. Bowling shoes are kind of stylish. And without missing a beat, the kid's like, who thinks that? And I'm like, well, they're not? And he's like, no. And they never have been. So that was my old guy moment. I thought like little patent leather, blue on one side, red on the other thing could be stylish, but apparently not. Or hipster even, but apparently not even that. So no.
But I want to know where that like that seed was planted, because
I don't know.
There's the only thing that I could think of is there's a Disney movie where they talk about bowling shoes and how the guy wants his own specific pair of bowling shoes. No,
there's
bowling
like those expensive men's clothing things have like the they have like different color shoes, right? Like they have like the colored leather, like blue and white kind of like shoes. Yeah, here's one. Let me see. Can I find this Paul Frederick, right? Like they have a blue and white, like little, oh, this looks like a bowling shoe. Where can I send you this link? Paul Frederick Desmond Oxford has beige, tan, blue, and white on it. It looks not exactly like a bowling shoe, but not unlike a bowling shoe. They're wingtips. They're colored wingtips. Come on, that's kind of like a bowling shoe.
What are we in the mafia in the 1940s?
Okay, so it's a no in the bowling shoes.
The top Reddit, when I search stylish bowling shoes, one of the top links that comes up is, does anyone make good-looking bowling shoes?
Well, there you go. Are there any positive responses?
No.
Okay, never mind. Okay, never mind.
What? No. No.
Well, if you're a sponsor out there and you make stylish bowling shoes, I'll wear them for you. So there you go.
Nothing more uncomfortable than bowling shoes.
Nothing. No, I didn't say they're comfortable.
They're so uncomfortable.
Yeah, they're kind of flat. That's true.
This is all coming from the guy that wears golf shoes to cut his grass. Don't
they aerate the grass at the same time? That's an inspired approach.
Mm-hmm. Keep telling yourself that. All right. Well, that includes this week's podcast. I knew the text was
good. We went from wrestling mats to bowling hardwood to grass with aeration to ice. Find us another podcast that does that stuff.
We can do it all. We can do it all. I have to now try to wrap up the show. We're going to be composed about it. We're going to say that we have a website. On the website, the website is called stuffsummersays.com. On the website, there's a section called with
Steve.
Steve. 5 stars, thumbs up, subscribe down here or over there, somewhere in that general vicinity if you're watching us on the YouTube channel. We really appreciate that. It's the easiest way to support the show. We've got emails. Mine's Darian@stuffsummersays.com. Steve's is
Steve@stuffsummersays.com.
Thank you to Jeff Byers for joining us. Other than that, before we get out of here, somebody buy Steve a pair of bowling shoes. That's all I
Hey,
ask.
Just so you know, they wear mafia shoes, because these ones I'm looking at, they are made in Italy.
That's what I'm saying. Okay. We have Twitter handles. You can find Steve's other bowling shoe takes on his Twitter. My Twitter is @StuffSummerSays. Steve's is
@SteveSamsel.
Goodbye. This is Unhinged.